Welcome everyone, and thank you for listening to this episode of VaxHub Careers in Vaccine Development, the podcast that brings you insights into different and exciting professional development opportunities in this space. My name is Ludovica Vaiarelli. I'm the Outreach Coordinator of VaxHub, and it is my great pleasure to guide you through this journey. In this episode, I am delighted to host Ferdinando Sereno, who is currently enrolled in an PhD in Biochemical Engineering and Bioprocess Leadership at UCL Biochemical Engineering. He has a background in pharmaceutical biotechnologies and vaccine process development, but let's ask him about his journey. So welcome, Ferdinando.
Welcome. And thank you for having me here.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up working on vaccines today?
Yes. So I would say the science as a whole, like as a discipline, was something that always struck me since I was like a child. I was always wanted to be a scientist, I guess because I was always a curious child. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to understand more about the world. It's like more the most cliche probably answer you could get for this, but it was quite like that. And in among all the disciplines of science, biology was the one that struck me the most. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, math, physics, they are everywhere, but most of the time they're very abstract, while biology tends to stick more into pragmatic and clearly acceptable concepts, something that you can grasp. So I started with biotechnologies because when I was at the time to start university, it was one of the sides of biology which was ascending to a broader acknowledgement by the public, you would say, because GMOs, vaccines, medicines, pharmaceuticals of all kinds were now something that was part of everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky because the bachelor that I did at the beginning in my home region at University of Camerino was in English. So it was definitely a good start because, you know, science is taught in English, is spoken in English, is communicated in English. So starting already learning science in English would have been a good start. Then I wanted to move more and more into the pharmaceutical aspects, and especially in vaccines, because I believe that vaccines are one of the few inventions of humanity that really change the course of our history. You could say
absolutely
that. The most famous vaccines are the ones we don't talk about anymore. For example, the smallpox ones, because they did their job. Now smallpox is not here anymore, so we can just go forward. I wanted to do something that change the matter, you know. Again, this is quite the cliche answer, but recent years have shown us what this is all about.
So something meaningful.
The realization for this did, however, come slightly late in my background, because I did my master thesis in something that was very much unrelated. It was about cancer, which still is another very important field of studies, definitely something that requires a lot of research. But at the time, I was really unsure of what I wanted to do next. So I did my master thesis, was on cancer research. I would say I didn't really enjoy much because the project was very new. Mm-hmm. So for a master student that has very little knowledge and very little, you know, experience, it's difficult to move into that.
Of course.
So after the master thesis, and after graduation, this in 2019, I was quite unsure what I wanted to do. I also didn't know if research was the things that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, you know, my background, my pharmaceutical biotechnology is something that can go pretty straightforward into the industry. So let's try in the industry. I went to GSK in Siena. Mm-hmm. And there I did an internship in vaccine process development, which is quite far from research, I would say, in the sense that the research was already done. The vaccines were already generated, were already studied at the beginning. It was now time to upscale the process for producing more material to run clinical trials, to confirm the validity of the vaccine itself. So it gave me lots of practical skills, but the lack of research, the lack of having a problem to solve, the lack of writing down what you need, what's your research question, what's your objective, and do experiments to uncover, let's say, the truth, but to uncover something new that was missing from there.
The challenge.
The challenge. It was the lack of, the lack of problem solving. Mm-hmm. Your work was pretty straightforward. It was like a 9-to-5 job like anybody else. I wasn't really grinding my brain, you know. I was not bringing something. I'm mostly executing orders. Okay. Finished that. And this was like basically at the end of the pandemic.
And this was still in Italy, right?
Still in Italy, yes. All my studies were done in Italy. I said, well, it's clear. Research is still what I want to do because I need the challenge, you know, of solving problems, of figuring out my own goals, my own objectives, and trying to find a solution to these objectives, toward these objectives. So, I need to do a PhD. Also, in that time, I sort of realized that another ambition of mine was to teach at academic level.
Okay.
And of course, a PhD at that point becomes quite the mandatory requirement. So I decided a PhD was the thing to do. And then,
so we have an aspiring professor here?
Yes. Something that
potentially
it's not as common as you would expect, actually. Many people, especially in the engineering field of related to biology, but engineering in general, are mostly concerned into going to work in the industry, which is honestly great for me, less competition to deal about. but it's definitely not as common. And also because I imagine, you know, academia requires sacrifice, a level of sacrifice that is different.
But then, so why academia? Like, what's exciting about it?
This is a good question. And maybe...
Because I guess research, you can also do research in industry.
True. Yes, that's true.
So what is there that you're like, oh, I kind of just, you know, want to stick around and be here and have my career progress?
That's a very good question. Let me know if I'm getting too philosophical. But the thing is, academia, like university in general, is a place where there is, even though it requires, of course, investments, even though there are people that need to invest money, it requires lots of things to work, is not directly made to pursue a profit, even though most of the research that is done eventually will be commercialized and turning into a product that can make profit. But first of all, university is a place where knowledge is gathered. I always love to talk about this. Every time I do an experiment, a small one, nothing too much, but I uncover something that I didn't know before, I am sure for a fact that in that right moment, in that specific point of time and space, I'm the only person in the world that knows that. Even if it's like something insignificant, even if it's not really something that will change the world, it never does, because science is made of very small increments and change happens after a long, long time. But there are you have just uncovered, you're just taken a small piece of knowledge from the universe, which in itself has no interest in giving you anything. But you've done it.
Yes.
And you, for a while, until you publish, hopefully, you know something that nobody else does. And academia is all about that. It's about uncovering the knowledge. It's about gathering the knowledge. It's about codifying the knowledge.
Yeah.
And this is something that benefits everybody at every level. Even when the knowledge that you gather is not necessarily something that can be commercialized, sometimes it's just fundamental research. So you're just expanding the overall knowledge of humanity. It's not really, you're not changing the world, you're not selling anything in the future. Still, it's something. I want to be
you're
in a place.
You're generating knowledge.
Yeah, and generating knowledge. And generating something that help people in the future learning more about everything that is around us.
Mm-hmm.
And just, maybe this is a bit of a romantic, idealistic view, but I really want to be in a place that has such a highly esteemed purpose. Academia is that, first and foremost. Just gathering knowledge, codifying knowledge, communicating knowledge. And everything that comes after that is like commercialization of products, investments, generating wealth and profit for everybody, for society as a whole. It's all good, but I want to pursue the actual pursuit of knowledge. And teaching that knowledge to the new generations, expanding the way we teach to the younger generations, you know, because education is a research in itself. So yeah, that's
a great answer, I guess.
I know, maybe it was too philosophical, but
no, I mean, it's very clear that you're very passionate and it's great to see, you know, this kind of excitement and that we've got people that truly love what they do and they've got, you know, a vision. We talked about your future plans in terms of career, but if you were to think about project-wise, so you're currently working on vaccines. Maybe tell us a little bit more about your PhD, NGD project. And then what are your plans for the future in terms of research then? If you're staying in academia, where would you want to move towards? Staying in the vaccine space, maybe moving towards other type of things?
That's a good question.
Tell us about that.
So I work with a class of bacterial proteins called encapsulins. This type of proteins, then in the space, assume like the shape of an icosahedron, so like a die with 20 sides, basically just one. It's like a normal die, but it's 20 faces. These are found in the most extreme bacteria in the world, like bacteria living in the bottom of the ocean, on volcanoes, sulfur caves, all the places no human would dare
enter.
In very
harsh conditions.
Yeah, this type of bacteria are known as extremophiles because they love extreme conditions. And because they can survive and thrive in there, then anything that they, any protein, any material that they have is as extremely resistant to adverse condition as they are. So we studied this type of protein, which is essentially a box because it's just like a container, which is empty. So it has an internal space and it has a large surface, meaning that you can put stuff on the inside because that's its natural job. Basically, this protein just incorporate proteins inside, and you have a surface that you can modify, for example, to target other proteins, to make it more resistant and stuff like that.
So this is like a carrier.
Exactly, like a carrier. Okay. Yes. Like the closest thing I can mention that gives the idea is like a virus-like particle. They're not really virus-like particles, but they're close enough. And so we basically have a box, and what we want to do is turn this box into a vaccine. This requires the box in itself has no function apart from being a container. So what we want, what function it will have depends on what modification do you do. Right. So we want to load, for example, nucleic acids on the inside. Could be, for example, an mRNA vaccine. So you can put the mRNA inside with some tricks, of course, that the research is still going on the side, and you can change the surface to make sure that this payload, so the cargo, will go only to the cells that you want to get, for example, immune cells, that will be able to take the material inside without damaging it, because of course otherwise it will be useless. Now, I mentioned mRNA vaccine. Why? The reason why we're here, COVID is almost gone, is because we got mRNA vaccines, right?
Yeah.
So the follow-up question, if I can take your job for a second, would be why doing this, right? Why, if there are mRNA vaccines already, why do we want to make more of those? The thing is, mRNA vaccine, we all know that the ones that we've been using so far can't last at room temperature for long. They need to be kept in the cold. They need to be kept in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
So this means that as in the first world, like in the Western world, this is fine. We have got freezers and fridges everywhere. But if you want to bring them to the developing world, where the so-called cold chain storage is not always assured, it gets more complicated. But because we work with a protein that is super thermostable, it can resist 90 degrees of temperature, it can sustain all sorts of conditions, you can imagine making a vaccine that can bypass this limitation and therefore can be sent and shipped all over the world. It's also a much cheaper option compared to mRNA vaccines, which are definitely cheaper as vaccines go. As in general pharmaceuticals go, because vaccine needs to be cheaper because they need to be given to everybody. So it's cost benefit is a very important aspect.
There's always space for optimization.
There's always space for optimization, which again, it's kind of the thing with science. You got a good thing, what about make it better?
100%.
Yeah, so in the context of my PhD, that's what I'm trying to do. On the one side, I got the vaccine design, so actually trying to make this vaccine. On the other one, trying to produce the vaccine in a way that is scalable, so you can grow to a larger and larger means of productions. Mm-hmm. So, for example, large industry and stuff. But also making it cheap as possible, because, again, it needs to be sent to the developing world. That's our target.
Yes.
So it's, of course, cost. Prices become a limiting factor in this case. For answering your last question about my future, I think vaccinology and vaccine in general, it's one field that I really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
In general, however, I always felt like a strong interest in protein engineering. So modifying proteins to confer them new properties. So something that they couldn't do before, now they can.
It's quite creative as a thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
People wouldn't think about, I guess, protein, I mean, working in this space and being creative, but it actually does have that component as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you look like a protein as a sort of whiteboard, you can do all sorts of modifications. Mm-hmm. Not all of them will be feasible. Not all of them will work. That's why you do science in the first place, to screen for those. But apart from that, it really opens up your mind when you want to do, for example, lateral thinking, like how can I solve this problem in a way that actually nobody had foreseen before, like giving a fragment of a protein coming from another organism that lives in very weird niche conditions, but maybe it can change the way the protein interacts and all this type of indication. So yeah, right.
That's the
freedom
that
it gives as a scientist to, exactly as I said, to just trying to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unprecedented, I think, in all kind of fields of biology and biotechnology.
That's amazing. I'm going to jump back to what you were talking about, the projects that you're working on developing this encapsulins.
Yes,
am I right?
It's an aerobic.
So that's, I guess, a platform to deliver the vaccine,
absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Are you working on any specific type of vaccine? Is it for infectious diseases? Is it cancer vaccine? Or like, are you focusing on one specific disease, or is it something applicable to different type of diseases?
No, we are trying to make it as generalizable as possible.
Right.
Again, the encapsulin is just a box. So the whatever role it will fill depends on what is put inside the encapsulin.
Yes.
Now, for example, Moderna is making mRNA vaccines for cancer.
Yes.
But the technology is the same, still an mRNA. So the ability of the immune system to take up that information as an antigen and then attack cancer thanks to that information and develop an immunity is solely given by the presence of the mRNA. In my group, we're working with other type of more classical technologies like protein vaccines. So in this case, it's the encapsulin plus an antigen protein on the surface. So there is no nucleic acids, there is no other stuff. So it's just like a more classical vaccine. It would be, for example, in the case of COVID, the Novavax vaccine, which is a purely protein vaccine. But our idea is that we want to make it as customizable as possible. We want to make a platform that we know we can produce cheaply. And again, mRNA is super flexible because all mRNAs are chemically the same.
Mm-hmm.
What difference is just the length. And if we can get in, but if it can get inside the encapsulin, then it's done for our intents and purposes. And if it can be read by the immune system, it's the same. We just trying to make a platform that then in the future can be customized with very little effort to tackle different diseases. It can be infectious diseases, can be cancer, as you suggested, can be all sorts of other things, honestly. Can be even
That's
just like, not a vaccine, could be just you just delivering like a payload that is toxic for cancer cells, like classical chemotherapy.
But deliver it targeted.
It would be targeted. That's
incredible.
The plan. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing about that. Sounds very, very interesting and fascinating. Final question. Do you have any advice? Actually, two. First question is, what inspires you most about what you do? I think we touched on this before, but would you just give us one sentence about what inspires you most about what you do? And second question is, do you have any advice for prospective students, people that would like to have a career in this space?
Yeah. So for the first question, what I love the most is just very simply solving problems. I just loving having an objective, having an obstacle that prevents me from getting what I want, and trying to figure out a solution how to get it. So trying to plan the experiments that tells me the information that I want to know, trying to find the right amount of reagents and concentrations that gives me the best results. So it's all about, for me, what gives me like actual just simply joy, just simply pleasure, is solving problems. And a PhD is a problem from the beginning to the end. So there is never lack of them. So it's, from that point of view, it's quite exciting. For some people, it'd be frustrating. It's also a bit of both, honestly. Now, for prospective students, I would say that I'm a bit uncommon as an NGD in the sense that I didn't study UCL, so I'm basically an outsider. And I came here with a PhD, I got enrolled in the program by applying for an NGD in the same way as I would have applied for a normal job in the industry. So this requires, I didn't have any recommendation, but I didn't have any professor from back home, for example, backing me up.
Mm-hmm.
To say, oh, like, he's a good student, so it would be good for you to have him in your lab.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do it on my own, which is very difficult, very frustrating, just like finding a job, essentially. So I would say for any prospective students to just, I wouldn't say just don't give up, because that's cliche.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you need to be very aware of what you want. At a certain point, I realized, okay, vaccine is my thing, protein engineering is my thing, and I will do everything I can to get into one of those PhDs.
So kind of narrow down and
you
just
need to
focus
narrow it down
on
because
that.
Science is huge. Science is huge. We could spend hours just trying to divide all the different fields and subfields and sub-subfields. And a professor, a PI by definition, is somebody working on a very niche aspect of something that is much, much bigger. Grants cover like hundreds of different experiments done by hundreds of different groups, but each group just works on a little fragment of that, right? And you need to get in there. So
on that, I wouldn't tiny protein modification.
Like. Exactly. But the point is, it's not like you need to know exactly like to the last word what you want to do. I didn't know even what encapsulins were when I got here the first time, you know. It was just, you need to show that you have the clear in your mind what you want to do next, because the PhD is a step. It's a step forward in whatever career you're planning in your mind. And it's a step that you do not for the sake of the science itself, which is also part if you want to do research, but it's also for any soft skills, any, let's say, character development that it gives to you. Mm-hmm. Like what makes you, like again, problem solving, like being able to be independent and solve your problems on your own. These are the skills people will learn and PIs look forward. So if you're able to show that, and if you have a clearer, more or less, field of what you want to do, I say just focus on that. Try not to aim too wide, nor aim too narrow.
Okay.
Because it's...
I think that's a great advice.
I hope it helps.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. It was a great conversation. So yeah, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lulu.
Thank you for listening to this episode of VaxHub, Careers in Vaccine Development, the podcast that brings you insights into different and exciting professional development opportunities in this space. My name is Ludovica Vaiarelli. I'm the outreach coordinator of VaxHub, and it is my great pleasure to guide you through this journey. To delve deeper into the world of vaccine development and production through fascinating stories from researchers, academics, entrepreneurs, and policymakers, among others, be sure to also explore our other podcast episodes, as well as our summary video series on the same topic.